Case number 14-1024, Charles Wiegand, a petitioner versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Radebaugh for the petitioner, Ms. Beard for the respondent.
May it please the court, my name is John Radebaugh. I represent Charles Wiegand, a bus driver who is represented by the Amalgamated Transit Union in Phoenix, Arizona. Michael Cornelius is the union's vice president, now secretary treasurer, who created exclusively a union Facebook page designed to promote communication between the union and its members. In 2012, collective bargaining negotiations for a renewal contract were taking place, and they began posting comments on the Facebook page discussing the probability of having to have a strike. And the comments posted were, in our position, threats, thinking of crossing the line, think again.
This was not a publicly available Facebook page in the sense that the privacy settings were such that your client could not access that, correct?
That is correct.
Doesn't that make a difference in essence in thinking about the picket line cases, which I assume you're relying on, that potentially a publicly available website or a Facebook page with different privacy settings than in this case could be potentially analogized, but certainly not one that's private? This is more like a private meeting.
I would agree that it's a virtual meeting, in fact. And if you look at board cases like the NLRB versus Bulletin, look at Battle Creek Healthcare and so forth, those are cases where the fact patterns were in the context of group meetings, mm-hmm. and comments were made that were deemed to be threats, and the union took no action, as in this case, to control it, have rules, calm down. We reject that comment. They took no action of any kind, and in fact, the union agent creating the Facebook page, the vice president at the time, encourage and embolden people by saying, let's have solidarity, we're going to go forward, and then the comment posted, well, can we bring Molotov cocktails? The fact is, these comments were made available, printed out, and handed, in this case, to the client.
But not by the union. No one in the union's authority, or with union authority, was writing this, right?
In terms of who handed it out to him,
Who was posting? The union wasn't posting any alleged threats.
The union on the web page created people to post.
Well, that didn't mean that the union authorized the posting of any alleged threats, right?
Your Honor, in fact, the union took no action at any time to put out rules to say, well, that comment is unacceptable. They took no action. Therefore, as in other cases that the board has held for years, the union is, in fact, responsible for having taken no action to disavow those comments.
Can I get a clarification on this, on what Judge Edwards was asking? So do you allege that any of the statements that constitute threats that are in the case at this point were made by a union official, or are they made by people who are not part of the union brass, but your argument is that, well, the union then should have come in and done something after the fact to disassociate itself from the comments?
Yes, the comments were posted by union members. The union took no action. However, the union agent, the vice president, did participate over months, posted 162 posts, and then...
But the ones that are there is a union person who posted a number of times over the course of the period. I get that, but in terms of what's in the case as alleged to be threats by you, it looked to me like the ones that are alleged to be threats and that are in the case are ones that the union official didn't make. He may have made other posts, but they're ones that were made by union members.
We would argue, however, in the context, as in analogous union meeting cases, that for the union vice president, on the first day of the strike, when they're still commenting and posting, and these threats are made by others posted members, and then he said, yes, and we're going to keep up the solidarity. We're going to make sure that no one crosses the line. In the context of a interpersonal discussion in a meeting, we're arguing that that actually condoned, affirmed, ratified, and encouraged these comments.
But with respect to that comment, the after-the-fact comment by the union official himself, which I guess who must be Cornelius, I guess your argument is not that that statement is a threat. Your argument is that that statement not only doesn't disassociate the union from the prior comments, but ratifies them. In other words, you're drawing a distinction between the comments that were made by the union members, which are themselves alleged to be threats, and the either lack of disassociation or affirmative ratification after the fact.
Yes, now, okay. The board did affirm and find, as did the administrative law judge, that the union agent did threaten not to represent members who crossed the line. So there was that threat found.
That's separate.
That's separate, too.
Right. Let me ask you, assuming you're right, what relief is your client seeking that he hasn't already gotten by the board's order?
The importance of this case, Your Honor, is...
Hear me, okay?
Yep.
It isn't about the importance of or non-importance. What relief is your client seeking to which he would be entitled that he hasn't already gotten by the board's order? As I read the board's order, he's gotten all he could get.
The relief would be affirmative in the context of that the union acknowledges that it must take control over its Facebook page.
You want them to rewrite the opinion. The board order is complete. If you look at the board order, and I've seen many, he can't get anything more than he's gotten. The union has been properly admonished. He's protected from any threats or their refusal to represent him, etc. There isn't anything more you can get unless you want us to tell the board to rewrite their opinion to admonish the union more specifically in terms which you're comfortable with.
Yes, sir. Yes.
We don't do that.
Then the case shouldn't be enforced on appeal because the board has cases where they have directed the union to the unfair labor practice was the failure to take any action to disavow threats made in union meetings. For example, in Bulletin, Battle Creek, and other cases unrelated to a strike line, unrelated to the picket situation.
My point is, what additional relief can you get that the board hasn't given? They have said they can't discriminate against employees in the exercise of their rights. They can't threaten employees, et cetera. I mean, there isn't anything more to be gotten. You've got all the relief you can get. You want, and we have cases on this, you want us to rewrite the opinion. You're smiling because you know exactly what I'm talking about. We don't rewrite the board's opinion. You've gotten all the relief you could get, even if you're right. He is fully protected.
Our position would be that the case either be remanded to the board
to do what?
They
write another order that says the same thing?
They need to affirm the decision in the context of what they did in Bulletin and these other cases where they found an 8B1A for the union to have failed to disavow threats. And I...
We'll give you time on rebuttal.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning. I'm Heather Beard, and I represent the NLRB, and we are asking that the court deny Mr. Wygant's petition for review. To begin, three of the five comments at issue here, as I think Your Honors recognized, were not ever alleged to have been made by either the union or union agents. That finding is undisputed.
But does that matter? Because aren't there cases, board cases, that say that the union has a responsibility to disavow? In fact, your brief, page 17, talks about cases finding that unions are liable for the conduct of pickets, whether they are agents or not.
Correct. Yeah, there is a line of cases, and this is what the election...
Okay, so let's talk about the relevant line of cases then.
Right. The line of cases are in the context of unions being liable for non-agents when the union has a picket line, and this was the theory that the acting general counsel pressed.
Right.
And what the judge found and the board affirmed is that the Facebook postings here were in no way akin to an electronic picket line.
And why not? That's I'm having trouble getting why threats on a Facebook page are different analytically from threats on a picket line by union members. You know, we're going to blow up your house, the Molotov cocktail. Why is that different in the current era? Sure.
As the judge explained in the decision, the Facebook page is different from a picket line because a picket line is traditionally and has been a public statement in geographic space where there's unfettered, where there is discussion immediate and face-to-face.
And that's, that's Facebook. Right. Discussion, it depends on the privacy settings, so maybe that, but that's not really analyzed in the board's opinion.
Right. The board doesn't specifically talk about the privacy settings except to the extent that Cornelius did make an effort to have the privacy settings such that it was only those people who were members of the union that were allowed access onto the Facebook page. And so, but regardless of the privacy settings, the difference is that Facebook being, as the board said a few times, an unfettered, robust discussion forum that is not in the actual geographic space of a picket line where employees are confronted with the choice immediately whether or not to cross. That bread and butter sort of labor law situation on a picket line is why there's an exception to the general rule for unions only being liable for agents. Because when a union is running a picket line, the union in that immediate space is, there's the possibility for some, you know, tinder for there to be immediate and violence that could take place. Now, with the judge,
you don't think cyberbullying, in essence, can lead to that too?
Oh, absolutely. Cyberbullying is not something that is being condoned. But what you have here,
why not? I mean, your theory would certainly allow, in the statements in this case, which, by the way, I think are obviously threatening. The statements in this case communicated to someone, again, let's put aside the privacy settings and assume that seems very akin to picket line kind of demonstrations and statements made by people on a picket line that would be perceived by the target of the message to be very threatening.
Well, what the standard is that the board uses to evaluate whether something is a threat, wherever it takes place, is whether an employee would be reasonably coerced by that statement.
Right. And now, so on that, what the board does, the board didn't do anything here on that. The board says they're not agents, and they're not threats in the board's footnote one.
Correct.
And then it incorporates to some extent, although it's very ambiguous to me, at least, to what extent it incorporates the ALJ's opinion. I mean, shouldn't we have the board explain, putting aside Judge Edwards' valid, in my judgment, question about relief here, but shouldn't the board explain this? This seems like a very significant issue to me of picket line analogizing to Facebook pages with the communication of threats, and the board doesn't even do anything on it.
Well, I guess our position is that the board did do something with regard to that in its footnote when it says that it affirmed the judge's finding that there was no violation of the act by failing to remove the comments from Facebook. And that theory that anyone was in the union responsible for disavowing the comments does incorporate all of what the judge found with regard to the difference between Facebook and the picket lines, except to the extent there was a Communications Decency Act finding. So the board's opinion does incorporate the judge's finding, and in fact the board's made two separate findings in footnote one. The first is that the comments were not 8B1A threats, and also that those who posted them weren't alleged nor found to be agents. And that's what Member Miskimara, his point is that he would have found that the two of the statements at the very least were threatening, but because they weren't done by agents and because...
But the agency, I thought we already agreed that the fact that they are agents is really aligning the key issue, which is the picket line analogy. So it seemed to me that footnote true but irrelevant when they said not agents.
We wouldn't agree that fact elides the actual issue. I think that the cases also that are cited in the reply brief by my opponent, which he just cited, Battle Creek and Bulletin, about cases in the union meeting, for example, outside the picket line context that he wishes to analogize here, are cases that are fundamentally different for the same reason that the picket line cases are different that the judge found, which is in those cases, first of all, in Battle Creek, you had a union agent doing the majority of the action, which we do not have here. And secondly, in both that case and in Bulletin, you had actual violence, sabotage, employees throwing eggs and ink onto other employees.
So the Molotov cocktail actually has to be employed?
No, I wouldn't obviously argue that.
Well, then you just did argue that. So that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I would say that when you're talking about the responsibility that a union has for the action of individuals who are not agents of a union, you have to take a look at the full context to ascertain whether or not a threat is coercive. And in this context, that Molotov cocktail comment, in the context of the 162 Facebook posts that were analyzed, in the context of a Facebook page in cyberspace, is not akin to any of the picket line cases, nor any of the actual immediate face-to-face threats of violence that those cases encompass.
Are the picket line cases agency cases?
Most of them, I believe, are agency cases. There are some of the Teamsters cases he quotes in the opening brief involve the issue of an exception to the general rule where a union is liable for non-agent action, and that is in the context of a picket line. So some picket line cases, you've got union agents doing misconduct or making threats, and in others, you have non-union agents doing that. And the reason why there's an exception to the rule that you don't have agency liability, a union has no liability for those who aren't its agents, is because of the picket line in public making the stand between going in or going out, and the possibility for immediate violence is much more on a picket line controlled by a union than in the cyberspace.
So in a picket line case in which the union is deemed responsible, your understanding of those cases is not that in that context what's going on is that the board is concluding that for those purposes the union, the person who's carrying out the threat on the picket line should be deemed a union agent. It's that even though they're not a union agent, they're still liability? Still responsibility?
Yes, that is my understanding, that there can be, obviously it's difficult and is a hard standard to hold any entity, a union as well, liable for actions of individuals for whom it's not responsible. And so if someone is not a union agent, the theories that exist to hold a union responsible are few and far between, one of which is in the special context of the picket line. And here I think what's also important is the standard of review, which is never mentioned in my opponent's brief, which is, as long as the board rationally determines that this is a case, that the unfair labor allegations should be dismissed, as long as that is the case, this court should not disturb those findings. And here, we do have a well-reasoned decision by the judge incorporated by the board as to why Facebook is different from the picket line cases. And so, for those reasons, we believe that this decision is a rational exercise of the board's expertise.
The principal rationale, as you understand it, and the board did incorporate the ALJ, at least significant pieces of it, is what's going on here, the board is essentially saying, look, this is a private screen. It's not open to people who could reasonably conclude that they were being threatened because they didn't have access to it. And when you look at it in sum, it's a lot of bluster and a lot of noise and union people getting themselves revved up for the collective bargaining battle, and indeed there are a lot of laugh-out-loud postings where they're threatening, quote-unquote, threatening each other. Is that what they're saying? Look, in context, it would be utterly unreasonable in this private context where union members alone are communicating with each other and they're all revved up, ready to engage in collective bargaining, having to endure a strike. It's not about threats to those who can't get to the posting, is just banter. Is that it?
That is, and in fact, you look at the decision in order of the board, which is at Joint Appendix 53, and it's page 5 of the decision in order, exactly what Judge Edwards stated is what the findings are of the board and the ALJ as to why a picket line is serving a purpose quite distinct from that of the Facebook page. A picket line is proclaiming in a highly visible way to the public that there is a labor dispute and seeks to enlist the public. This was a page that Cornelius at least tried to keep within the union membership.
Would you be comfortable there? Keep going, sorry. And
sure. No, and The Facebook page is not drawing, the quote from the judge's decision is, it doesn't draw any line in the sand or on the sidewalk. And because of the unfettered, robust discussion that the employees were engaged in on Facebook and would reasonably expect to go on Facebook, the judge found this was not a situation akin to a picket line. And we would argue that the board did rationally make that finding.
If it were a publicly accessible Facebook page?
That could be, if it was a publicly accessible Facebook page, for example, and was advertised as such, come look and see, our picket line is tomorrow morning, and this is for all the public to see about our labor dispute, I think we would have a different case.
Definitely have a different case if it's publicly accessible.
And in this instance, what the board is finding is that the fact that from the day one of this case, no one ever alleged, the general counsel didn't, and neither did the reviewing party, the charging party here, never alleged any of these folks were agents. So the theory always had to be that there was disavowal that needed to occur. And the only context in which there are board cases of disavowal are the picket line and these other two cases brought up in the reply brief that talk about, like I said, face-to-face, immediate action where the tender can
So can I get back to something then colloquy you're having with Judge Kavanaugh? Because there's footnote one in the board's decision tells us what the board decided. And the first sentence just says that it presumes that we're affirming the judge's finding that respondent did not violate the act by failing to remove certain comments from the Facebook page. So I don't know that tells us a whole lot other than what the result is. But then the second sentence is the one that's doing the work. And it says that Chairman Pierce and Member Hirozawa find that the comments were not 8B1A threats. That doesn't have anything to do with the picket line cases, at least not
right,
on their own.
Right, that's part one of the finding, correct.
That's a separate finding that they're not threats. Frankly, I'd like to ask a question back because I don't understand how they're getting there since the ALJ, as far as I can tell, never touched that. But in any event, just put that aside for a second. And further find it significant that the individuals who posted them were neither alleged nor found to be agents of the respondent. What does that last part of the clause have to do with the picket line cases if the point of the picket line cases is that even though somebody's not an agent, there's still liability? Because it seems like then there's the Venn diagram doesn't have any intersection.
I believe that the footnote, the work that the footnote is doing is demonstrating that because the comments were not made by agents, the only way the union could be liable for them would be if we're in the exception box of a picket line. And because the first sentence of footnote
one. Where does it say that, though?
Well, the first sentence says, in affirming the judge's finding that the respondent didn't violate the act, and part and parcel of the finding that the respondent didn't violate the act is the finding on page 53 of the joint appendix that this is not a case akin to the picket line cases. So because
that's the ALJ's determination, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, I mean, that is your argument, that the board often incorporates the ALJ's determinations except where they say otherwise. I mean, that's the answer to Judge Srinivasan, right? That's their reasoning.
Yes, the reasoning is
context, and your context includes the fact that this is a private Facebook posting. These are not public postings. If it was public, you'd have a real problem. It's an entirely different case.
And what the board is basically finding is, yes, on page 53, where they incorporate what the judge says on page 53 by saying they affirm the judge's finding. And on page 53, the judge goes into great detail explaining the difference between the public and the private and why a picket line is different.
But there's more there. And that's why I had a concern initially when I first read the opinion in this case, is that there is some discussion of the privacy. But then there's broad discussion by the ALJ that distinguishes picket lines from even anything that's a website in cyberspace, unlike a website in cyberspace, which would seem to cover at least the language of the ALJ's opinion and would seem to cover even public Facebook pages in its rationale. And that seemed of concern to me, but you were saying, I think, let me make sure, that you'd be comfortable with a decision that just talked about the privacy angle and limited it to the fact that this Facebook page was not publicly accessible.
Well, what the board is finding, and I would urge the court to do, is affirm the board's rationale here, which is that this particular set of facts with the Facebook page, with Cornelius attempting at least to keep it to union members.
We don't have to buy into all the ALJ's reasoning, correct?
Right. It wouldn't incorporate all of the ALJ's reasoning. And in this case, though,
because some of it seems, frankly, to elide the potentially key distinction between a private as I see it, potentially key distinction, I'm still not sure, between a private page and a publicly accessible page. Right?
Well, I would argue that, yes, that to the extent there's an underpinning of the don't look rather at the picket line cases as an analogy, the underpinning to that is this is private, that would be public. That is one of the underpinnings. I wouldn't want to say, however, that the ALJ's opinion is incorporated by the board would or would not be the same result if we had a different kind of piece of evidence on the privacy settings. That is not really very clear from the record in terms.
We don't have to decide.
Right. Correct.
We have to decide in the context of this case.
Absolutely, and that the board rationally.
That's a difficult issue for the board to grapple with potentially in the future, it seems to me. But can you address the redressability issue that Judge Edwards raised?
Sure. What I would say with regard to that is absolutely the only thing at issue here is the notice posting that would be posted by the union in this case. And my read of the my opponent's brief is that they would like the order to perhaps more specifically talk about ceasing and desisting from failing to disavow threats. I mean, it's true. I agree with Judge Edwards. This decision, the notice that was posted that the union already posted, does preclude the and warns the union that it must not threaten employees. I mean, query then, what constitutes a threat? I know my opponent believes that the order should be more specific. We would agree that as a charging party with a finding that didn't go the way the charging party wanted, they certainly have standing to come here and make this argument. But as far as the relief is concerned, I imagine they would ask the board
to want a slightly different posting.
Posting. That's my understanding, yes. And unless you all have any other questions, I just ask that you affirm the board's decision. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We'll give you a couple minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. One, I'd like to address Judge Edwards' question to me, and it seems to me the discussion would lead to a cease and desist order that the union would not allow its Facebook page to be used to threaten fellow represented employees. Here, I want to go back and underscore.
You mean if they ever have a Facebook page again, they don't have it anymore?
Correct. But if they were, yes, sir.
I thought they still do have a Facebook page, no?
He took it down.
Yeah.
Is my understanding.
I think you can find something, but anyway.
were they to create and go forward, which obviously I believe is very commonplace now, we want any Facebook page to not allow postings that are threatening.
So now, what about the privacy issue? That seems to me the key that counsel emphasized was that the ALJ opinion can be read, at least, to distinguish a private Facebook page that's not accessible from one that's publicly accessible.
Here, what we have in reality, and I was born before Bill Gates, but I've learned a great deal. First of all, is a Facebook page is analogous to the old-fashioned union bulletin board. A Facebook page is analogous to a meeting, and sometimes employees are sick or they're working. They don't attend a meeting, but it's quite interesting with human beings that you do learn what went on in the meeting. You learn what was posted on the bulletin board. And the fact of the matter here is, Your Honors, what we're asking is when the union sponsors something, they should not permit and they should make clear that threats are inappropriate. They should take action to set standards, because whether somebody was actually on and allowed in, they're going to learn about it just as in these other cases. People who weren't at the picket line learned what went on at the picket line. People who didn't attend the meeting learned what went on during the meeting. And that's our argument, and I thank you very much.
Okay. Thank both counsel for their arguments. The case is submitted.